cliffcentral.com. Craig Wilkinson is a man who's written a number of books. He does loads of things in society to try and bring the importance of fathers into most people's focus, because it is probably, and I've spoken about this at length on my show, the single biggest social ill we have in South Africa is the fact that young men grow up without decent male role models. It's something I've spoken to Craig about many times before. We've done events together, we've hosted and facilitated various conferences about this topic, and it's something that isn't going away. So with Father's Day very much on people's minds at this time of year, I thought it would be a great idea to get Craig in and to talk about his latest book, which we'll get to in a second or two, but especially to talk about the things that we really care about in South Africa, and that is that we're constantly, sort of as a nation, searching for our father. And now that Madiba's gone, we've found some pretty awful role models to put in his place. Craig, it's a pleasure to see you.
Thanks, Gareth. Great to be here as well.
Yeah, you're kind of a hero, and I'm not being glib about that, because I've seen you do this work. I've seen you on television doing it. I've seen you in person doing it, and I've seen you talking about it with passion and animation. You care about this enormously. You're a dad yourself. Indeed. So it's not as if you're one of those people who says, do as I say, not as I do. You're actually living it. And it can be challenging at times, but that's part of the fun of being a father, and it's part of the excitement of being a father. But this country really does have a major gap when it comes to the dads. This is something you alerted to me too, years ago. What's the source of this problem?
Well, I think, Gareth, it's multi-layered, isn't it? I mean, our history plays a massive role. There was a tremendous breakdown of the family unit, wasn't there? Migrant labor. We have a legacy of hugely absent fathers. Men with historically have had families in different parts of the country due to the fact that they were forced to be apart. I think there's been an emasculation as well, a mass emasculation of portions of the population. I mean, not to, you know, one doesn't want to labor on the past, but there is a legacy. So we have a lot of wounded men walking around South Africa. I mean, the primary need of a man, let's backtrack a bit. I mean, the primary role model of any human being is their same gender parent. For you as a boy growing up, your primary role model is your dad.
Correct.
For a girl growing up, her primary role model is her mom. A father cannot model to his daughter what it means to be a woman, because he simply isn't.
Sure.
And where you have a lack of fathers, you have a boys growing up. It's that old bull elephant story. You know, the bull elephants, that story of the Pilansberg, when elephants were relocated to the park at a young age, and they grew up and they started behaving absolutely terribly. And conservationists found that the only solution was to go back to the Kruger Park, bring a bull elephant in, and within weeks the behavior was completely sorted. So boys growing up without the validation of a father and the impartation of masculinity from an older man to a younger man grew up not knowing what it means to be a man, number one, and growing up wounded because their masculine soul hasn't been validated. You see, a young boy growing up, the question on his heart is, Dad, do I have what it takes? And he needs to hear that from an older man. It doesn't have to be a biological father, but an uncle. And in the absence of that, he grows up feeling inadequate. And we know that when men feel inadequate, they either withdraw and fail to use their strength, or they become aggressive and misuse their strength. And both of those are disastrous. And that becomes a cycle. So, I mean, the question you asked me, it's a cycle, and it perpetuates, doesn't it? And to break that cycle is quite a tricky thing.
Because then you have men creating the same situation they grew up in.
100%. They perpetuate exactly that.
Listen, it can be very depressing, and that's not why I wanted to talk to you, because you have a very positive take on this and how we can start to solve the problem. But what is masculinity? I mean, what is that all about? Because there are all kinds of studies going on at the moment. There are gender courses that people study at university. There are women's studies at university. And a lot of this actually undermines the good relations between men and women rather than assists it. And we hear news stories almost weekly about what complete dicks men are. And a lot of it we must own and we must deal with. But what does it mean to be masculine? What is masculinity?
Well, I think you've got to start from the standpoint. I mean, I agree 100%. I don't know if you're saying this, but I'm saying this, is that I think we've gone, as a society, gone way too far. The pendulum has swung ridiculously. I mean, the whole issues around in American universities, microaggressions.
And,
you know, I mean, it's ridiculous. Men and women are fundamentally different, equal, totally equal, mm-hmm. we're equal value, but stunningly different. And I think we need to start from the standpoint, we're not the same, but the difference is beautiful. I mean, if you look at both of us, or all of us are here because of the fantastic and beautiful creative dance, if you want to call that, between masculine and feminine energy.
Right.
A man got together with a woman, they made love, and the result was a life. And I think the universe and the world and society continues to operate beautifully when you have masculine energy.
Yin and yang, right?
100%. I mean, it's the two operating in tandem, equal but stunningly different, and it's beautiful. So masculinity is all about, we have strength. I mean, the reason men are able to dominate women is because they're physically stronger.
Mm-hmm.
We have a different biological makeup, different wiring in our brains. We have a tendency to be more bombastic and wild and seeking out aggressive activities.
And this is because of evolution.
It's evolution. That's our past.
So we were the hunters. We had to go out. We had to be a little more independent in some ways. Mm-hmm. We didn't communicate in words.
Yeah.
We communicated with grunts and hand mm-hmm. signals so that we wouldn't get crushed by mammoths. Mm-hmm. And I suppose a lot of it was down to survival and competitiveness.
Yeah.
Like men are aggressive and competitive, and that's how we establish hierarchy.
The thing that I need to say to people is that it's good. These things are good. It's not a bad thing. I mean, I say to people, men are designed to be dangerous. We are.
Yes.
Not ever dangerous to a woman or a child or to each other or to society, but dangerous to the things that threaten society.
Yeah.
So imagine if every man used his strength well to fight against whatever's wrong.
But before we even get onto strength and aggression, isn't this competitiveness hugely important? Because that's where innovation comes from.
Yeah.
In order to get ahead, sometimes of just the other men, so that you can attract a mate, guys will do pretty much anything.
Yeah.
We're motivated by things that no one could possibly fathom. And sometimes when you say them, it sounds really dumb. Mm. But this idea that, you know, that we're just traipsing through life trying to assert our dominance on things is not true.
It's
a question of significance.
Correct.
It's a question of being able to impact things positively, and it's a question of being able to raise your progeny in the best possible way.
100%. And that's what causes innovation and development and advancement. I mean, you look at the ancestors of any particular ethnic group, you look at them. The men were never content to just stay where they were.
No, otherwise they died out.
They died. I mean, there's a hill. I want to know what's over that hill. I mean,
But this means that whole bullshit discussion around the patriarchy is absolutely without foundation. It's a social construct in the heads of people who've spent too much time at universities or in feminist talk circles trying to justify some sort of history that never happened. If you look at the history of humanity, it is the history of struggle and of trying to walk upright and of trying to use tools with our opposable thumbs and of trying to raise families.
Correct. And you know, we've misappropriated so many words. If you look at patriarchy and matriarchy, I think they're both, in their true senses, are beautiful words.
Mm.
Because what does a patriarch do? A patriarch uses his strength to love, protect, serve. What does a matriarch do? She uses her strength to protect, to love, and to nurture. I mean, the two working together are beautiful. It's not about dominance. It's not about dominance at all.
Yeah. So where did this argument become derailed? Because it used to be, and again, I don't want to paint the picture that history was wonderful either and there was balance there, because men have abused their authority and power, and for too long they've kept the gates closed, and it's been all about ego and me, and women were really subservient and second class in so many ways, and in some parts of the world they still are.
Yep, no doubt.
But by and large, the history will show that men are meant to, again, I mean, this is hard to define, they're meant to forge ahead, they're meant to protect, these are things that are important for the woman to be able to thrive.
And both genders thrive when each gender is fully male and fully female. They thrive. They flourish and come alive. I mean, I often in the work I do, I get an initial backlash from feminists, you can imagine. Mm. But when I talk about the fact that we as men are here to love, serve, protect, provide, and use our strength well, I mean, I don't get any arguments about that, because that's exactly what a feminist would want. I mean, if the definition of feminism...
Well, no, some feminists, I mean, third wave feminism...
It does go extreme.
It's just man-hating.
Call it
whatever else you want.
Yeah, yeah.
There are obvious feminists who want equality and all kinds of noble things that have their contribution to make and whom we should appreciate.
Yeah.
But those third wave feminists who are just sprouting male hatred, it's ridiculous.
Absolutely.
So what does it mean? We've now discussed masculinity. What do men want and what do women want? because men are motivated by different things to women.
Yes. Well, you know, it's interesting if you backtrack to youth, and I've seen this picture with my own eyes. You get a bunch of young guys hanging out on their BMX bikes after school, feeling a bit bored. And the one guy will say to the other guy, geez, I wonder what would happen if we rode our bicycles into that brick wall. And the guy said, yeah, let's do it. And they do it. And as a guy, I totally get that. I mean, I totally understand that because part of me would love to do that as well. A woman, generally, a female teacher, mom, would just definitely not get that at all. So if you go back to that fundamental difference, so the drivers of men and the drivers of women are fundamentally different.
What are they?
Well, you see, I mean, women are far more relational than men. Women are all about nurture. I mean, how often does a matriarch or the grandmother pass away and suddenly the family dinners don't happen as often? So yeah. Women are the glue. Women have a beauty. And if you think about beauty, and I'm rambling a bit, but I'll get to the point. I was in a restaurant the other day and I was wearing that Real Man, Real Dad t-shirt. And there was a gathering of women at a table next to me in the restaurant. I was doing some work. And as I got up to go, this elderly lady, she turned out to be 95, reached out and grabbed my hand. And she asked me about my t-shirt. And it turned out she was turning 95 and she had a whole bunch of family around to, the woman in the family to wish her. And I looked at this woman and I was entranced by her beauty. Now that sounds strange, 95-year-old. Her physical beauty had faded, but there was a beauty inside this woman, just something that would just make people feel completely at ease and a love. And so women bring...
It's like a power, really.
It's a power. It's the feminine beauty. I mean, I'd hate to think of a world without women because I think we just run around beating the crap out of each other and farting and being complete in the end. Mm. Possibly. The women bring a beauty and a glue, and their drive is beauty and relation and glue and holding things together. I mean, how often do you get a woman that stays in an abusive relationship? And what is it all about? She wants to fix the guy. She wants to heal the relationship. Mm. So she rescues someone that can't be rescued. So women are driven by love, beauty, and the need to bring together society. Nurture. Men are often driven by, someone put it beautifully. He said men are driven by three things. The desire for a battle to fight, an adventure adventure to live, and a beauty to pursue. And that's, you know, you look at all the movies that men have made famous. They have the evil guy that we're fighting. We all want a cause and a purpose and a reason. I mean, why do you think men are sports mad? Because that's our modern battle, is it? You know, when Kaiser Chiefs go against whoever they play, that's our battle. Those are our warriors. I mean, men are mad about that. So battle to fight, adventure to live. We're all about adventure. When guys get together around a bri, we don't talk about relationships, do we? Mm-hmm. We don't talk about, oh, Gareth was
exciting
really sad.
Exciting stuff you've done. And exciting stuff you still want to do.
Yeah, and the time you nearly died and the time you got caught stealing an apple. I mean, it's adventure. And then beauty. I mean, we're all about pursuing. You know, the guy, you want to look at something funny, get a bunch of drunk guys.
Yeah, but even if it's just hot women. I mean, 100%. You can't have that conversation with a lot of girls anymore because they think that you're immediately objectifying them. But we can't help it. We're hardwired to be turned on when we see a girl who's
100%
pretty.
Right.
And it's just nothing you can do about it. So it's like, for example, a woman is drawn to communicate, to ask about feelings, to extract information, and sometimes even to be manipulative. Mm. So men have this desire to connect physically
100%.
With a woman they find attractive, and sometimes he'll take it, just like a woman can turn into a manipulator, sometimes the man will take it into a situation where he does objectify.
100%. So, I mean, these things innately are good, but when they go wrong, they can be horribly wrong. And that's
sure,
the thing.
And we'll get to the wrong stuff in a second, but I'm just trying to sketch the scenario so that we can start talking about dad and what it means to be a dad and what it means in South Africa to be a father. There are also obviously things about the male character which we do have to be careful of.
Sure.
I mean, there is this dangerous element, this aggressive element, the fact that men are they prickly, sometimes they take things immediately personally and they can be very, very out of touch with their own feelings, because we don't like talking about feelings, and not because we're incapable of it, because it doesn't interest us. It's like a subject at school you didn't care for.
Right.
If you didn't like geography, you didn't like geography. The worst thing for me would be to have to sit in a room and have to talk about how I feel the whole time. Not because I'm afraid of my feelings or I don't want to get into it or there's some kind of psychological scarring. None of that's true in my case.
Doesn't do it for you.
Doesn't do it for me. It's like, do I want to sit and do maths equations all day? It's just not fun. I think a lot of guys are like that. They would much rather hit something with a stick or go out and run and jump and fight and fuck and wheel a barrow or drive a truck.
Right. Yeah, 100%.
Right?
Yeah, 100%. It's a different wiring. Yeah. Not to say we can't and shouldn't at times, but it's not our predominant drive.
So what kinds of things can we take from our feminine energy? Because everybody has a bit of masculine, a bit of feminine energy. What can we take out of the feminine side of humanity to make us better men? This idea of being able to listen, for example, might be a very useful tool for us to be able to connect better with women and with other men.
Yep. 100%. I mean, so look, that's just...
What other ones are there?
Well, nurture is my favorite. As we're talking about the context of a father, there's something unbelievably powerful and beautiful about masculine nurture, the strength of nurture. You know, when you, as a father, when your kid comes to you, that should be, I call it the lap of grace. It should be a safe space, a space where the kid emotionally, spiritually, physically is safe. Mm. And that's the father's strength combined with the dad's nurture. And it's a beautiful thing, powerful. I mean, women naturally nurture, but guys who learn to nurture are beautiful. The listening thing too. I mean, we talk about the four faces of masculinity. There's a warrior face, you know, the kind of stuff where you just suck it up and deal with it and don't be a pussy and don't cry. You know, you've got to deal. You've got to get up there and make it happen, you know.
And potentially you see everything as a threat.
Correct. Yeah, there is that element.
Okay.
Then there's the friend face, you know, the softer side. There's the lover face. Mm. You know, these are the different faces of man. And I think a whole man learns to put on all of those faces as and when it's appropriate. So men can be everything the woman need them to be and society needs them to be. I think often, Gareth, the reason we get prickly, it goes back to a certain woundedness, doesn't it? I mean, if you're 100% secure in who you are as a man, there's very little I can do that's going to make you feel crap about yourself, because you know who you are. You can take it objectively and you can respond appropriately. I think a lot of men grow up and they do feel a bit. I mean, we do struggle with our ego and we do struggle with a sense of, am I quite the man this world needs me
to
be?
We also used to, and for thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years, we've resolved all of our problems with force.
Yeah.
So you had a disagreement with another guy. You'd fight each other.
Yeah.
One of you would win, one of you would lose, and then you'd move on.
Yeah. Yeah. You're the dominant male.
So you know your place and you know what you've got and you know what you don't.
Yeah.
Whereas with women, they'd talk it out.
Yes.
And someone would...
Or sulk it out.
Learn, or sulk it out, but they'd learn from each other in terms of the verbal stuff. So if someone then uses verbal, jarring, nasty, vicious words on a guy who's insecure, he's not sure what to do with that.
Exactly.
And if he didn't have a dad, it's especially difficult for him because his natural instinct is then just to immediately become violent.
Right.
And that's, I think, where a lot of guys in South Africa, even guys who are seemingly in control, lose it and they become abusive.
Yeah, 100% right.
So what do you make of this current situation in society where we've got guys who are abusive, they're rapists, they're murderers, and in South Africa we do have an epidemic of this.
We do.
So it's a very big, serious problem. You can't push this under the carpet.
You can't.
What's that all about?
Well, Gareth, for a long time I've been saying that South Africa is raising an army of sociopaths. We are. Because of the circumstances under which many men grew up. No fathers. Moms are often away the entire day trying to make a living. They're living in a community where there's a lot of poverty. So there's a deep sense of emasculation as a man. There's no male role model to validate and to show how to behave. And there's a sense of, you know, science is even showing now that people who grow up in that kind of environment, where they're surrounded by that kind of a lack of love, a lack of connectivity and some violence, the portion of the brain which actually deals with empathy is underdeveloped. So you have a person growing up who's incapable of feeling empathy. It's a survival mechanism.
Jeez.
So we're raising this army of sociopaths and then the perfect storm. I mean, you look at what's being modeled to us by our leadership. It's complete amorality, isn't it?
Mm.
You look at what's happening, and this is what makes me so angry when I deal with a lot of poor communities, is that a lot of people are poor and they don't need to be poor. The resources are here in the country.
Yeah.
So the political climate and economic environment is creating a perfect storm of people growing up without role models as male, out being validated, so they're deeply emasculated. Historically, they've been emasculated, being treated as second-class citizens. There's a whole bunch of factors that come together. So if you take together the woundedness of men, and many men are deeply, deeply wounded. I mean, you and I deal with an element of that, but I mean, if you grow up in a very extreme environment with abuse and violence and lack of fatherlessness, you're going to be deeply wounded. You take that, and then you take the toxic side of the patriarchal thing, you know, the big lies about masculinity we grew up with are sex, power, money, And big boys don't cry. Those four things, you know. Mm. To be a man, you have to have lots of women, you know, lots of sex. To be a man, you have to be powerful in some way or another. Yeah. To be a man, you have to have lots of money and stuff. And by the way, you can never talk about this shit because you're not a man if you do that. Yeah. So you add those misconceptions about masculinity to the deep woundedness, and you've got the perfect storm where people are going to be abusive. It's a sickness.
And this is at the root of our problem because people will say, oh, it's because of pornography, or it's because of poverty, or it's because of lack of resources or education. It's none of those things. I've seen poor people who are uneducated who treat each other with respect and community, and they help each other and they do good for the children and as much of that as you can possibly imagine. 100%. And those people in some ways are morally superior to all of those people who have everything.
Very much so. Very much so. I mean, Scott Peck said it. He said, to the extent that a society has values, law is not necessary. To the extent that a society has no values, law is unenforceable. And I think that's the situation. If you grow up with a sense of deep sense of inadequacy and no values around life and law is not going to fix it. You know?
So are women justified to say all men are trash, for example? I mean, how do you feel about that?
Look, I think it's absolutely 100% counterproductive that. I think I understand the sentiment behind it, but if you think about this, there are millions of excellent men in this country. There really are. And the ones who are doing the abusing and the raping are very sick men.
Yeah.
So if you want to fix the problem and you tell a sick man you're trash, chances are he's going to act worse than he did before. If you tell a good man he's trash, chances are he's going to start thinking, well, should I be a good man? And his self. So I think the men are trash.
Or he'll just walk away, right?
Walk away, get pissed off.
When I see that, I don't even get upset.
I don't get upset.
Because these are fanatical people online. It's obviously a pain. It's a reaction from pain. I understand that. People, when they're upset and when they're hurt, they lash out.
Yes.
So, but I never take responsibility for all of men because I can't be responsible for all of men. I don't like identity politics for the same reason. And that's not how I would treat women. So don't include me in that bracket, please. It's just deeply insulting to the women in my life and to the example that I'm trying to set, not to just kids, but to my own family.
100%. And for me, the worst part of that is the message it gives to boys. See, boys growing up, I do a lot of work with boys in high schools and EFT colleges. They need to know that men are not trash. They need to know that men are good. They need to aspire to something. They need to be told, you're good. Your drives are good. Let's use them well. And if they get a message that men are trash, it's very painful to them. And chances are it's going to make them worse than they were before.
Well, it's sort of like that religious concept of original sin. It just seems to me to be completely counterproductive to good behavior. And to engendering people with the right idea of how they should value themselves.
If you label someone as crap, chances are they're going to believe it or not. No. And if they do, they're going to behave like crap.
Well, your self-worth is just immediately knocked down, particularly when it's fragile.
And that's at the root of most problems, self-worth.
So when you became a father, were you nervous? Because there isn't a guidebook as much for dads as there is for moms. I mean, moms learn from their moms.
Yeah.
It's innate in some women. They're just fortunate to know exactly what to do in terms of that nurturing and that ability to connect and that ability to create a safe, secure environment for families to grow in. The nest, effectively. Yeah. For men, they all do it their own way. Some of them don't do it at all. Mm. And some of them are so scared of screwing up that they just keep an arm's length distance from the whole thing.
And traditionally, men are far less good or prone to asking for advice than women. I mean, you run a course for
very
men.
Good point.
They don't come for women; they've crowd in. You know, we just don't do that. So we don't like asking advice, and we often haven't had it well modeled to us. I mean, different generations have had different foibles for their fathers.
Even when we think, because a lot of guys think that they were raised by a good father. And then in retrospect, they look back on their dad and they think, well, this guy was a bit of a loser. But he's your dad, so you think, oh, well, he can't do wrong.
Exactly.
I've got friends who, in their 50s and 60s, their attitude to their father is completely different to what it was when they were in their 20s and 30s and had kids of their own.
Right.
They suddenly realize, well, this was a weak man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I looked up to him, and perhaps those weaknesses are still in me. It's a hard realization for some guys.
That's the thing. Most of us need to be on a journey to wholeness ourselves, you know, looking at where we were messed up in our childhood and fixing it. I mean, taking responsibility, because you can't change it, but fixing it and restoring it. I mean, when I became a dad, I think, Gareth, a lot of people don't know what the hell they're doing when they become parents. They really don't. I mean, you just by default become, and you think, I honestly think if more people knew what it took, less people would become parents, because it is absolutely mind-blowingly life-changing, more than anything else that you do. I mean, anything else almost is reversible. You emigrate, you can always come back. You get married, if it doesn't work out, you can always get divorced. I mean, with a kid, for life, you are bonded to that child, and it makes you more vulnerable than anything you could possibly imagine. So I have the deepest respect for people who choose not to have kids, because often having a kid is the most selfish thing you can do. Because you're doing it for me. I'm doing it because I need to procreate, or because I need my you know, that's bullshit. It's not for you. It's not for for parents.
But it's nature's way too. That's why we have so many kids who aren't wanted. Because
it's a tragedy.
It's a real sadness. Because these tragedy. These kids are just from the outset brought into a world where they're always going to be something that wasn't intended.
And they're going to perpetuate awful. That. Chances are 90% they're going to perpetuate that exact cycle.
So when you became a dad, what was the scariest part of that?
Well, your sense of responsibility increases 100-fold. You know, I always used to jump out of airplanes and do that, and suddenly you don't want to do that because you realize this kid, you know, humans are unique in the sense that they're utterly, utterly helpless at birth. I mean, most other mammals can kind of survive. They can walk. Wow. Kids are utterly,
giraffe falls out and within the first couple of minutes it needs to learn to walk.
So this little child, this little human is utterly, utterly dependent on you in every single... So your sense of responsibility increases enormously, and your survival instinct, just you want to be there and whole and okay for them. So that changed me a lot. It also, you know, I realized early in my fatherhood journey that you can only give what you have. You know, you come to me and say, Craig, I need to borrow $100. That's easy. If you want to borrow $1 million, it's a different story. If I don't have it, I can't give it to you. Yeah. And your kids are asking all these questions, and they need so much. And if you don't have it, you can't give it. So it becomes this parallel journey of saying, you know, I need to be and become a whole man as I raise my son to become a man and daughter to become a woman. And that's this journey that I think a lot of guys don't take, and we need to.
Well, you've written a new book, and it's called It's a Dad, Every Man's Guide to Pregnancy, Birth, and Becoming a Father. To me, this is what's been missing, is a book like this that just helps people to immediately figure out how pregnancy works, because for most of us, it's still a mystery.
Yes. Well, especially guys.
All the women of the tribe in a tent and the men outside pacing around nervously. And you hear a cry and you go, yay!
Yeah. And, you know, we want to fix stuff as guys. You want to get in there and take it out and make it happen. But you can't, you know. You've got to let nature take its course.
So, I mean, you've gone into all the details of this now. You talk about everything from the different kinds of birth to different kinds of pain medication to latching to breastfeeding. I mean, it's really, this is terrific.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you look at, I got this pregnancy guide, and it was for men and women. So the one side was for women and the other side was for men. Women had 230 pages, men had 18 pages. And most of those 18 pages were stuff that you needed to buy for your woman. So, I mean, there's just a dearth of, you know, guys are just not informed.
Yeah.
And they don't ask either. So, yeah, that's just, it's a humorous, because small. Guys don't like to read long and they like to laugh.
It's quick. This will be an easy read.
Yeah, you can sit down in 2-3 hours and
just read. Over 100 pages. Yeah, what a pleasure. A
very quick read.
What about your own relationship with your dad?
Well, I think, Gareth, it was also, in retrospect, very difficult. I mean, as guys, you suck up and you do it, and there was an expectation you just got to be. You know, I think one of the things that I experienced very much was the cookie cutter type thing, where you know you have a child, it's dough, and you've got a shape you'd want that kid to be, and you clunk. You know, anything outside of that particular shape is just not acceptable. You know, it's got to be, and I think like a lot of probably guys my generation growing up, you need to conform to the cookie. And even if it's completely not who you are, you're not seen. So you're not seen and acknowledged. And I think that was a big struggle. And that's what I try to get right in my kids.
What do you mean? Your dad wanted you to be what?
Well, he was very left brain. Is that the engineering?
Yeah.
So a very clinical cut engineering, so academic engineering type. You know, he's the kind of guy, if he liked bananas and you didn't, he looked at you like there's something wrong with you. You know, how can you not like bananas?
In other words, to him also, everything had to conform to his worldview or else it was just wrong.
Correct, in many, many ways. Yeah.
A lot of dads are like that because that's also a male way of understanding the world.
Correct, yeah.
You know, we plug in our own experiences and evidence and we go, well, if it doesn't fit with this, it must be wrong, not I'm wrong.
Yes, indeed.
So, because I've survived.
Exactly, yeah. I've got this thing. You know, and I don't explore beyond my worldview because that would be threatening. So, I mean, good man, still married to my mom, good provider, solid guy. So good and bad.
Yeah.
I guess like most.
What was good that he gave to you that he when it comes to this role modeling thing?
Well, I think he modeled fidelity. He modeled provision. You know, he provided constantly, very consistent, very steady, very there physically. No, I mean, I think a lot of men of that generation emotionally were limited in their ability to be there.
Right.
I mean, you can be there for your, you can be present in the house, but not there at all, not engaged. And I think that's where a lot of men fall short. And I think it's because they're dealing with their own stuff. They just haven't dealt with their own, so they contain, they become small.
I'm just thinking of examples. I got a lot of friends who've become dads recently, and they say that the tough part is knowing when to step in, because the woman is primary, and you've got to know your place. But sometimes you've got to kind of take the initiative.
100%.
And it's hard to do that sometimes for a guy because you think, well, first of all, I'm trespassing on what's her territory, but second of all, maybe doing less is better. Rather than making the mistake, I'd rather just stay out.
Well, I don't know about that. I think the two most important words in a dad's lexicon is be there. And that means be there if you're clumsy, be there. If you bath the kid and almost drop them, rather do that than, you know, I mean, if you change a nap and you get pee in your eye. I mean, so the point is you're engaged and you're there. And I think that's crucial. I don't know about this. You know, you get a gatekeeper syndrome with moms where moms, you see, moms have such a different experience. I mean, from day one, they have this physical transformation in their body. So they're nurturing and they're bonding with a kid from day one. They're feeling, for dad, it's just a concept, isn't it? I mean, it's just like, you know, there's a grumpy, enlarging wife and I'm going to have to provide for a baby. I mean, you're not experiencing it. So by the time the kid pops out, I remember when Luke was born, I was horrified. I was in at the birth and this kid, and he was red hair and natural birth. So he was squashed and squished. And he, I remember standing there thinking, you know, you expect angels to be singing and choirs to be playing and harps. Man, it was horrible, Gareth. I thought, shit, I didn't sign up for this. Is that mine? You know, this is all that's going on inside me.
Yes.
And then you only bond over a couple of days. But the gatekeeper syndrome is a woman often thinks that this is my baby. I gave birth. This was painful. I've been bonding. You know, you don't know how to treat this. This I do. And so the dad gets a bit excluded. And it's tough for a dad, too, because sex is not going to happen for a while.
No.
The woman's emotional needs are completely met by this child. So you're kind of superfluous to needs. I mean, you become the gopher. The guy needs to nip out and buy the nappies or whatever. So I think it's very important for dads to break into that little holy circle and make it a trinity as opposed to a dual and just get involved no matter what. So there's no turf. There's get him. You know, Freud said, you know, the father of modern psychology, he said he can think of no greater need in childhood than the protection of a father. Not a mother, the protection of a father. So that dad's role to come in there and set parameters and boundaries and make both feel secure and good is absolutely crucial. You know, I think it's because dads don't know what to do or how to do it, or the mom saying that makes them step back. You know,
what about fathers as role models for daughters? Because that's a different relationship. You mentioned earlier, the primary role model for a girl is going to be her mom. Yeah. Primary role model for a boy is going to be his dad. But what about girls? Because there's a unique kind of relationship, and you hear all the old wives' tales about how the girl will grow up and she will try to marry a man who treated her like her father treated her mother.
Yes. I think there's some truth in that. I mean, my daughter recently flew to New Zealand for a year, and Gareth, that was my last baby flying the coop. I sobbed. I mean, it was like I got to the car after there, but I held it together for her. Got back to the car and I just broke down. I mean, it was such an emotional. I mean, just because the relationship you have with your daughter is just unbelievably special. Because you just want to protect that little girl. You just want to make sure she. So I think the modeling you do for her is that you model to her the value of a woman.
Hmm.
So the way you treat the mom is, remember, she's a woman in the making.
Yes.
So how you treat woman is And you're the most important man in her life. So how you treat woman shows her how you value woman, and she's a woman in the making. So you treat her mom well and love her and nurture, etc. You're actually treating her well. You're actually saying, I value woman. So you model to her that. Also, the desire of a woman growing up is, I want to be pursued. I want to know that I'm worth fighting for. I want to know that I'm lovely and beautiful. And so as a dad, you romance your daughter. You know, you take her on dates. You open the door for her. You treat her like a princess. You just, and that grows in her a sense of deep, I'm worth fighting for. So therefore, when that pimply teenage boy comes and he just wants to get my, I'm worth more than that, you know. So there's a huge role that you play as a father in the self-worth and validating her femininity. Also, what happens is for a girl, there's something in a woman that really yearns for the masculine validation, as there is in a man. That's why a lot of wounded men just go screwing around, because they want, you know, it's a boost to the ego. So a young girl, if you as a father, say for instance she gets a new dress and the mom says, oh, you look so beautiful in that dress. She loves that. But what she really wants is she wants daddy to come home and say, oh, my honey, you look amazing in that dress.
Yeah.
Then she comes alive. So there's right. That validation of her femininity, which is just so crucial in a father. Because then she doesn't need it from, you know.
Some other guy.
Exactly, yeah.
Men, obviously, you mentioned earlier that we think the bad misconceptions about men, power and sex and money and not talking about your feelings. But there is some truth to those stereotypes, because that's how we rank ourselves with other men.
Right.
And that's a reality.
Yeah.
Whether it's the right reality or not, that's perception is everything here.
Yeah.
So what do you think in modern society and in a world of social media and in a world where there are 1,000 new parameters that you have to compare yourself constantly with other men come in, do you think that that's contributing to the problems of what masculinity means, or do you think it's helping us figure it out better?
Look, I think, and I say this to young boys at school, I say it's probably the toughest time in the history of mankind to be a boy, because the roles are not clear at all, are they? The need for manual labor has reduced enormously. I mean, jobs are changing. There are more females graduating from university in the States than there are men. I mean, men's jobs are under threat. There's a lot of stuff that men are dealing with in the classic sense of.
And by the way, this doesn't mean, I don't want to say what you're not thinking, but this doesn't mean that we are unhappy to be competed with by women.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, we're only too happy if there are more women who are engineers and doctors and lawyers and professionals, and that there might be fathers who are suited to staying at home and doing all that kind of thing. We'll leave it open to anybody and everybody. I mean, there's this kind of mixing in a healthy way of gender roles, but it does mean that for a lot of men, they've lost the ability to figure out whether or not they are actual men.
That's the thing.
And when that happens, then things go really horribly wrong.
Well, then
when they're not the provider, when they're not the safety officer, when they're not the one who can wrap you in their arms and make you feel safe, then guys start to go, well, what the fuck am I here for?
Exactly.
I'm a sperm donor.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of the rabid feminists would confirm that.
Yeah, they'll say that. They're not helping the cause either, because what they're actually doing is probably pushing men further away and making men even more hostile. So how do we find that balance?
Well, I think it's a matter of just bumbling your way through, but it goes right back to the old core issue of, do I feel that I am enough as a man? And that comes from your childhood. So, I mean, if you feel that you're enough as a man, you're not going to have a problem being a stay-at-home dad and your wife earning more money than you, because you know I'm a man. So I don't show my manhood through sex, power, and money. I am a man. I don't have to play the man to be the man. I don't have to pose or macho, you know. I don't, because I know that I'm enough. I know that when it comes down to it, I can protect and love and nurture and give my wife what she needs and give my child what he needs or she needs. You know, I know I'm enough. And that's the
core. We do need to win. This is an important part of gender relations, which I think nobody's really spending enough time thinking about. We need to win. There are certain victory conditions to being a man.
Yeah.
Whereas to be a woman, you don't have to win every time. Sometimes actually letting someone else win is part of your power. That never happens with men. We don't like to do that. If it's you versus me, even if it's in a debate, even if it's in a braai conversation, someone's got to win. That's how it works for us. The antelope must be killed.
Right.
Otherwise, you haven't hunted successfully.
I think more important than winning is being respected. And you don't have to always win to be respected. So a man longs for respect. Woman longs for love. generally. I mean, both okay. want love and respect, sure. but the core drivers. So even if I don't necessarily come top, but I have your respect as my partner or as the mother of, you know, of my child, then that for me as a man makes me feel okay. You respect me, and I know that. You know, that's very core. When a man is disrespected and emasculated as a result of that, that's when he lashes out and becomes very ugly.
Sure. Do you think we're getting any closer to sorting out our problems in South Africa, or is it getting worse? Sure.
Gareth, I'm completely schizophrenic when it comes to South Africa. I mean, I absolutely love it and I absolutely hate it. I mean, I have tremendous, I see the most phenomenal people in the work I do every day. Beautiful, amazing, phenomenal men and women of all different backgrounds, races and creeds. But I see also massive degradation. And this army of sociopaths, I think, is a very real, it's coming home to roost. When a guy can murder a woman, burn her, and then that's just one story. When guys in the forest in Tekai can rape a young, you know, that is dire, isn't it? And that's not getting better, that's not getting better. So unless we have some serious intervention, you know, they say it's much easier to raise a whole child than to fix a broken adult. We got a hell of a lot of broken adults in this country. And you know what? To be real, that's not going to go away.
So it's going to make life for those of us who are trying that much harder.
Yeah. And I think also what it'll do is highlight the beautiful people, because by contrast and by need. And for me, what I'm trying to do, and I think what we need to do, is we need to raise an army and mobilize an army of good men. Men that say, fuck this, enough. I'm not going to tolerate this. This is not on my watch. Men
that's
that
what you
actors.
Do, right? I mean, yeah, I've seen you. You get a whole bunch of guys to stand around and affirm themselves.
Yeah.
And it sounds like a silly thing if you don't feel those gaps in your life and in your psychology. But to these guys, it may be the first time they've ever had any feeling of self-worth.
Well, Gareth, I do a lot of work with high school boys and also early college boys. The hunger in these guys, the raw, rapacious hunger for masculine validation is just, it's palpable. You know, it really is.
And so, that's why they'll end up role modeling a drug lord or a gang leader.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because that guy's powerful and respectable to the immediate community. Yeah.
And you look at our politics too. You know, I was recently at a meeting. I went to that. I was invited to that meeting where they had all the Nelson Mandela, all the different foundations, and the previous presidents. The national dialogue, unbelievable meeting in the early half. The wisdom and experience of that group of people was just inspiring. Probably the best you'll find in the world because of the crucible we've been through. Then the EFF arrived in the afternoon. You know, in the robes, and there were amongst them very angry, very hurt, very unfathered people. The glazed look in the eye, the alcohol in the breath, the absolute inability to engage on a rational sense. Anger, unfathered.
So, just rage.
Rage. And not entirely unjustified as well, but certainly needing fathering and guidance. So that's the relative of our political...
What do we do about those guys? Do we just throw them away?
No, we need to father them. We need to raise an army of good people in this country that can mother and father and direct those people and listen to their rage, because there is some justification for the rage, and manage it, father it.
Well, I love that you've written another book for us, but your first book, Dad, is still available, The Power and Beauty of Authentic Fatherhood. Craig Wilkinson is our guest this morning. Keep doing the good work you're doing. I really don't say this to be patronizing or to be friendly. I've seen you at work, and what you're doing is making a massive difference. So one sociopath at a time will convert them into real dads.
Amen to that.
And break those ugly cycles.
Yeah.
Is this the biggest problem in South African society?
I think so. I do. Think about this. If you had fathered men who you were using their strength well in every tier of our society, parliament, business, government service, where would we be now? Very different place.
Your head. Well, there's a good reason why Father's Day is the quietest day on Black Twitter, and we've got to change that.
Yeah, 100%.
Thank you so much, Craig.
Thank you, Gareth.
Cool. CliffCentral.com.